We want to note two things about this episode. First, we recorded it last week before the worst of the news of the last few days. You'll probably be able to tell. And second, this episode does include discussion of sexual harassment and assault. You may not have needed another streaming service, but this week one came along anyway. It's HBO Max, and it's part HBO, part Warner Brothers, and yes, it's where you can now stream all the episodes of Friends. They've put out a modest slate of original programming as well, and it's safe to say some of their new shows are better than others. Is it worth your while? Good question. I'm Linda Holmes, and today on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, we'll guide you through HBO Max, so don't go away.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who specialize in issues such as isolation, depression, stress, anxiety, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment when you need professional help. Get help at your own time and your own pace. Schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist. Visit betterhelp.com/happyhour to learn more and get 10% off your first month.
Welcome back. Joining us from his home in St. Petersburg, Florida, is NPR's TV critic Eric Deggans. Hi, Eric.
What up? What up?
So HBO Max launched last Wednesday, as you hear this. HBO and some of WarnerMedia's stuff is on there. We didn't actually know at the beginning that they were going to call this HBO Max. It seemed like it might be called something like Warner Brothers or something else. HBO Max was kind of a branding decision, but they do have a bunch of licensed stuff. They have, as we mentioned, a few originals, six of them in all. There is a TV back catalog. One of their big things was we're going to have Friends. They also have Big Bang Theory. If you don't get enough reruns of that from the 8 or 10 a day that you can watch on regular television, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, which actually to me is appealing. West Wing, Doctor Who, South Park, Adult Swim, Cartoon Network. And then they have some of the, like, the CW DC shows.
Yep. You're forgetting the last minute edition, though. Uh-huh. In the 11th hour.
Uh-huh.
All 8 Harry Potter movies.
That's true. All 8 Harry Potter movies. And not to be forgotten, also the Studio Ghibli movies, which are a big deal for a lot of people. Those are the Miyazaki animated films.
Yeah, after years of those guys saying they would never stream.
Yeah.
Their movies. The venerated Japanese animation house decided to sell 21 of them to HBO Max. One of them is coming out in the fall, but the 20 of them are here now.
Yeah, and you do have a lot of the TCM, the Turner Classic Movies kind of classic stuff. There's, you know, your Wizard of Oz and Singing in the Rain. And, of course, Citizen Kane. They're happy to tell you, want to be a cinephile? Watch Citizen Kane.
Well, it's a place to start.
Plus Sesame Street and Looney Tunes. So, Eric, look, here was my problem. I didn't even understand whether I had HBO Max when I got up on Wednesday.
Right.
Because I subscribed to HBO through my cable box. Yes, I still have cable. And I couldn't even figure out at first whether I had HBO Max now
or
had to subscribe to it. What the heck's the deal?
Yeah, okay. So Warner Media is ultimately owned by AT&T, and AT&T has not met a system that it can't make more complicated than it needs to be. This all goes back to when HBO decided to create a standalone streaming service. So like if you didn't want to get cable, but you just wanted to get HBO online, they created this app called HBO Now. So if all you did was buy HBO streaming, and you have HBO Now, you automatically get HBO Max. And I think what happens is you call up HBO Now, then the app will ask you if you want to convert your subscription to HBO Max. It's very simple. They cost the same, but of course, HBO Max has everything that's available on HBO Now, plus all the extra stuff we've been talking about, all the extra stuff that Warner Media put together for this new streaming service. Now, they had to offer streaming for people who buy HBO through a cable subscription, too.
Right.
So they created another app called HBO Go. And so with HBO Go, because of all the complicated, you know, AT&T making things more complicated than they have to be, they haven't cut deals with every single cable provider to automatically right. transfer your subscription. So what you can do is call up HBO Go and see if it asks you to transfer your subscription, or mm-hmm. you can go to help.hbomax.com. And you will see they have a list of all the cable providers that they have deals with. And they have deals with the biggest ones. You know, most people, I think, who get cable will probably be able to transfer their subscription if they already have HBO. Same price, but you get a lot more material. And then if you don't have HBO in either one of those, then you buy HBO Max as a standalone.
Yeah, I think this is how it changed over the course of Wednesday. When I got up in the morning, I didn't have HBO Max because they didn't have a deal with Comcast yet. And then by the time I went to bed, they were like, whoops,
yeah,
we've only been planning this for several months, but we just came up with our deal today. And, you know, there were some issues with communicating, I think.
I actually think what's also happening is that when the launch date came up, mm-hmm. these negotiations came down to the wire. The Harry Potter films right. were the same way. People had been told for a long time, we're negotiating, we don't know anything. Yeah. And then when the launch date happened, suddenly something happened and somebody gave on one side or the other and they cut a deal. Right. And my hunch is that that's what happened with Comcast too. They held the negotiations down to the wire and then they realized the launch was happening and it made more sense to be a part of it than to not be a part of it. I thought it was crazy that they didn't have a deal with Comcast before this started. And they rectified that during the day of launch. So
yeah, there are still some set-top boxes like your Roku and your Fire TV and stuff like that may not have it yet.
Yeah.
I think a lot of those are still in flux. I think if you can't get it right now, you may be able to get it in the future. It's just kind of, they're still kind of noodling around. And most of these are, you know, the HBO Max price, as you said, is the same as kind of the traditional channel, the same as HBO Now, which is the $15 a month for the moment. So it is possible that for a lot of people, they're getting a lot of new stuff for the same price they were already paying. Mm-hmm. But we want to talk a little bit about some of the originals. And Eric, you're going to start by talking about an eminent entertainer's debut on HBO Max.
Yes, you know, HBO Max is making history. The first late night talk show, well, kind of late night talk show, hosted by a 3.5-year-old furry monster. So the Not Too Late Show with Elmo debuted 3 episodes when HBO Max rolled out. And basically, they've been kicking around this idea of building kind of a late night show around Elmo for a while. And number one, it's this wonderful mix of Sesame Street and The Muppet Show. So Elmo is teaching kids how to develop their bedtime routines, but there's also a lot of jokes in the control room and stuff that's happening behind the scenes as they're trying to put the show on. The conceit of the show is that Elmo's pretending to have a TV talk show, and it's helping him get ready for bed at night. But it can also help actual children watching it with their parents develop a bedtime routine, particularly in times like this where they feel unsettled, where they may feel anxious, where they may feel worried that they can't see their friends because of the lockdowns. This is a show that can help kids develop a nighttime routine and pair them with a trusted friend who's Elmo. So you got the whole educational component happening, but it's also just kind of a fun show. And if you loved The Muppet Show, for example, you're going to see a lot of touches that will remind you of that. And even as an adult, even if you don't have kids, you might want to watch it.
Yeah, I like the fact that it's only 15 minutes, too. I like the fact that they picked up on the fact that, you know, maybe if you want a bedtime show for your kids, 15 minutes is better than trying to get to the half hour or the hour or whatever. I also liked the fact that particularly the episode that John Mulaney was on, he has a kind of like a weirdness that's almost like bordering on the Pee-wee's Playhouse-y kind of oddball quality, as opposed to somebody like Jimmy Fallon, who obviously is Jimmy Falloning all over the place. They have some really fun musical stuff. They had a little Nas X thing. They had a Kacey Musgraves thing. I like these. I think these are cute.
Yeah.
All right. So speaking of legendary performers, my first original I'm going to mention is Legendary, which is a similar to a lot of other competitive reality shows in that it culminates in these performances, but it's ballroom. It's the ballroom scene that you might know from, you know, things like Paris is Burning and
Pose.
And Pose, yes. I really liked this as a way to kind of learn about ballroom. I thought that was really interesting. They're really committed to helping you understand, not in like a pedantic explainy way, but in a really fun way. They do want to help people who don't know much about ballroom understand what the origins are, what the influence is. You know, the kind of the opening pitch of the show is this is a genre that was started by Black and Latinx transgender women. It's been incredibly influential. And now in the houses that are competing in this show, some of them are Black and Latina transgender women, and some of them are, you know, not. But they're very firm on what the origins were. I think it is really cool in that way. I love meeting the houses. I will say the way they actually shoot the competition drives me crazy.
Yeah.
Because they cut so much and the cameras are all over the place. I just want to watch the performance. I think the actual competition is my least favorite part, but the opportunity to kind of get to know all the folks who are in these houses, I thought was really cool.
The show feels like, in a weird way, like if you had a cool friend who was in the middle of this scene and they brought you to a club and it turned out to be like the coolest ballroom competition in the city.
Yeah.
And they're right next to you saying, hey, this is what's going on. You know, like one house seemed to be full of Black gay men except for one white woman,
mm-hmm.
who was the house mother. And in another house was all cisgender women.
And they'll talk about that. They'll talk about the fact that like they make the comment about how it's for, you know, ballrooms for everybody.
Yeah, it was awesome.
It's really awesome. Cool. I liked that one. All right. Your second one is significantly heavier, but I think it is one of the most newsmaking of the HBO Max originals.
Yeah, this is a documentary called On the Record. And it does stand out because all the other original stuff, I think, is kind of fun and to different degrees kind of lighthearted. And this is very serious and somber. It's a documentary in which several women, 8 or 9 women, accuse Russell Simmons, the hip-hop mogul, of sexually assaulting them. It's based around one woman in particular who was an executive at Def Jam Recordings, the legendary hip-hop label that Russell Simmons co-founded. She was an executive in the 90s, and she claimed that he lured her into his apartment, claiming that he had a demo tape that she would want to hear of a new act, and that when she went into his bedroom to get the tape, that he trapped her and sexually assaulted her. And then there are two other women, one a woman who was a rapper and another woman who worked as an executive assistant at Def Jam, who also claimed that Russell Simmons at various times sexually assaulted them. Drew Dixon is the name of the woman who was the A&R executive at Def Jam. And the film kind of hangs everything on her story. Her story is the main sort of spine that everything runs through. And the point is to not just talk about these women's experiences, but also to talk about the history of misogyny in hip hop, how it may have gotten worse with the rise of gangster rap in the 80s and 90s, and how Black women have felt left out of the Me Too movement and felt pressured not to talk about when they are sexually assaulted by Black men because it's thought to play into stereotypes about Black men or to help the criminal justice system to further oppress and somehow destroy Black men. But, you know, of course, you know, you have to be honest. You have to talk about what happened. And so these women are fighting to tell their truth. And in the middle of all of this, this film was supposed to debut on Apple TV Plus. Oprah Winfrey was an executive producer. She has a relationship with Apple.
Right.
And she, for some reason, lost confidence in the film and pulled her name as an executive producer. Apple TV dropped it. The film debuted at Sundance, and then HBO Max picked it up instead. So there's been all this question amongst hip-hop fans and people in the Black community about whether or not to believe the film because Oprah pulled out. Russell Right. Simmons has denied everything. Another executive, L.A. Reid, who was accused, has denied everything. And people don't know where to stand. I think the film makes a very powerful case. You know, again, when you're in a situation where multiple women come forward and say they had the same experience, at the very least, you have to pay attention and you have to listen to their stories. And I think the film does a good job of that. The viewer has to sort of decide what they think after they see it.
Yeah. I have to admit, I have not sat down with this one yet because I did want to do it at a time when, you know, I sort of had some headspace for it. So yeah, I will be sitting down with that one. The other one I want to talk about is much, 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 much lighter, but it is the other one that probably got the most promotion, I would say. And that's an anthology series called Love Life, which stars Anna Kendrick, who is now the queen of streaming originals, I think. She was involved in one of the Christmas movies that premiered on Disney Plus. She was in a Quibi thing. Now she's in this. Her character, whose name is Darby, you know, it's an anthology that kind of goes through each of her relationships, theoretically leading up to what they talk about as like lasting love. So you start off and she has her first kind of real love as an adult. And, you know, they go from kind of dude to dude. And most of them are just the worst.
Most
the
of them worst. Are dudes. Real dudes.
They are really the worst. And the funny thing about it is this drove me nuts because, you know, if they give you just one episode, that's one thing. But there are 10 and they gave press 8. Yeah. I think I like this show, but I don't know what the end of the, like, it's one of those things right. Where they're obviously trying to be like, and the lesson in the end is, and you don't know what it is. And I have a couple of theories about where they could be going, one of which I like, and one of which I really can't stand, one of which would kind of ruin it for me. And so I'm confused about how to think about it, but I did enjoy the 8 episodes that I watched. Zoe Chow plays her best friend, and I thought she was great. There's a little more kind of focus on her as the show goes along. I thought she was really wonderful, but I'm waiting for those last 2 episodes before I make a final decision.
And this is the closest thing to sort of a star-driven original that HBO Max has ready. Mm-hmm. And so it makes sense that they would hype it a lot and try to get people to watch it.
So we want to talk, we're each going to pick something out of the back catalog that we're psyched that they have. I thought about going into their kind of their Turner Classic Movies area has a lot of really, really fun and cool movies. And I was very impressed with some of the stuff that's in there. But the first thing that I watched on HBO Max when I fired it up, this is the truth. The first thing that I watched was a Bugs Bunny cartoon. They have new Looney Tunes, but I watched an old Bugs Bunny cartoon because if you can figure out the title of the one you're looking for, you can find old Bugs Bunny cartoons. So I watched the one where Bugs Bunny plays baseball. So it's Baseball Bugs. It's the one that has the first base Bugs Bunny, second base Bugs Bunny, third base Bugs Bunny. And that's the first thing. It's amazing. Like, they sit around and they're like, oh my gosh, we have streaming originals. We have Friends. We have Harry Potter. And I'm firing up HBO Max like, ooh, Bugs Bunny.
Well, I think one thing we've learned, though, in the age of coronavirus is that for streaming services, the library is key. If you're a streaming service like Apple TV Plus or Quibi, where everything you have is new, people aren't connected to it. They don't necessarily want to spend the money to figure out if they're going to like it. But if you can go to somebody and say, hey, you got Looney Tunes. Hey, you know, you can watch Big Bang Theory. Hey, we got Friends. Automatically, people are like, well, hey, you know, I like all that stuff. And then maybe I'll check out the new stuff, too. So, you know, HBO Max got lucky in a sense that so much of their service is really about that deep library. So if I was going to recommend something, I'm a huge HBO fan. I've loved the channel since it was founded. And so what's great about HBO Max, I mean, you had it on HBO Now too, but what's great on HBO Max is that you can dig into that HBO library. The Late Shift, the film about how David Letterman
Oh, man, I forgot about that.
Got passed over for the Tonight Show job and Jay Leno got it instead. And, you know, I really like that. And here it is. You can check it out. So once you sort of consume all the stuff that's on the surface, you get your Friends fix or whatever, take some time to dig into that HBO vault and look for some of the original stuff that debuted 20 years ago that people have forgotten about that's still really good.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good pick. Well, we want to know what you think about HBO Max. Have you gotten it? Did you automatically wake up with it? Are you planning to get it? And what are you excited to watch once you do, besides Eric's beloved Harry Potter movies? Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH. Find us on Twitter at PCHH. Before we go, we wanted to let a few of our fourth chairs share what's making them happy this week. Take it away, Margaret H. Willison.
Hi, this is Margaret H. Willison, one half of Two Bossy Dames newsletter and one third of the Appointment Television podcast. What's making me happy this week is Apple TV Plus's blissfully, blessedly weird and delightful sitcom, Dickinson. It's an absurdist comedy about the life of famous poet Emily Dickinson, wherein noted rapper Wiz Khalifa plays death and one of Emily's closest confidants is a person-sized bee she imagined while high on opium. So please watch it and then come tweet at me about how much you love it. And we can just share gifts back and forth of a shirtless John Mulaney playing Henry David Thoreau until the cows come home. Or we can leave our houses again, whichever comes first.
Hey, this is Petra with NPR Books, and what's making me happy this week is actually a Twitter feed. I don't know if any of you follow Anne Louise Avery, that's Anne with an E, on Twitter, but you really should. She writes these amazing little mini fictions, and I've tried to describe them to people, and the best thing I can come up with is it's Redwall for grown-ups. She writes about these little animal characters, and they seem to live in some kind of unspecified mid-century part of England, somewhere near a coast, in charming cottages, and yet they are all dealing with current events in very heartfelt ways. Here's just an example. For his morning constitutional, Old Fox had gone to post a birthday parcel to a friend in Whitstable who was being sorely tested by the great sickness. He packed violet sugar biscuits, golden cowslip wine, thick rhubarb jam, a very rich cherry cake, and a volume on wildflowers. And then there are little photos underneath that she's been inspired by that you can look at. That's, you know, they're like usually animal photos or vintage paintings or fashion. And they're just lovely. You can escape into Anne Louise Avery's Twitter feed and just lose yourself.
Once again, Margaret recommends Dickinson on Apple TV Plus, and Petra recommends Anne Louise Avery's Twitter feed. That brings us to the end of our show. Eric, thanks so much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. Now I can go walk the dog.
Absolutely. And thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second, subscribe to our newsletter. It's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all right back here on Friday when we will be talking about the Hulu series Rami.
Cell phone footage shows police killing unarmed Black people. Protesters take to the streets, rinse and repeat for a decade. Why?
Everyone moves on.
A blunt reminder that we've been here before on Code Switch from NPR.